Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. It's good to be with you as the week starts out. We had patchy frost at night over the weekend, so it's probably time to bring in the houseplants, but otherwise, not much to say about this week's predictions, except clear skies and sunny weather, with the first possibility of rain only starting next weekend. Days will be in the low 70s and nights in the 40s and 50s, but I'm still going to bring in my houseplants from the porch. We're going to get right down to business today, since we'll be using almost the entire hour to bring you a recording of the mayor's debate held at City Hall last week. But first, real quick, here's a roundup of Iowa stories in the news last week, brought to you by the Iowa Informer. A lawsuit was brought against former Governor Terry Branstad by Larry Hudland, a former state criminal investigator who was fired in 2013, shortly after he reported that Branstad's security detail was speeding. State attorneys for Branstad are arguing that a lawsuit filed against the former governor should be suspended because he will be unable to attend a December 4th trial as he performs his, quote, vital duties to this country, unquote, as ambassador to China, which make it extraordinarily difficult for him to defend himself in trial proceedings. Branstad's lawyers argued that the trial should be delayed until his service as ambassador, quote, during this highly tumultuous time for our country, unquote, is over. A New York Times report on Saturday analyzed economic decline of small towns in Iowa and how it is changing their demographic and political makeup. The report quoted longtime pollster J. Ann Seltzer, who predicted that political pundits will likely consider Iowa a swing state for one more presidential election cycle, but perhaps after that it could be seen as a red state. According to the report, it is, quote, leaving a less educated and less mobile group of voters more likely to vote for Republicans, whom they see as more in touch with their lives and beliefs, unquote. Dave Swenson, an Iowa State University economist, told the Times, "We educate the hell out of our people, but our economy can't use them, so they leave." A former Iowa Department of Natural Resources employee who served as its coordinator of animal feeding operations for 14 years before he was let go this August has filed an appeal to get his job back. Gene Tinker was told that the state's budget woes were the reason for his termination, but his program received $1.6 million annually in fees from livestock farms, the Associated Press reported. The program was set up as an environmental regulatory check on barn construction and manure management. Although a 200-state law prohibits the DNR from transferring the fees to other funds, Tinker is now alleging that the department did exactly that, and State Senator David Johnson, a former Republican who is now the State House's sole independent member, has called for an audit. The Des Moines Register reported a shortage of pathologists at the Iowa Medical Examiner's Office and cited problems with the delayed return of cremated remains of the dead to their family members, a problem that's been ongoing since 2016. They reported that this may cost the lab its national accreditation. And that was a roundup of Iowa stories in the news last week, brought to you by the Iowa Informer. You can find more at iowainformer.com. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. We'll use the rest of this hour to bring you a recording of a mayor's panel that was hosted by the Story County League of Women Voters. This public event was held on Thursday, October 12th at the Ames City Council Chambers. It was one of a number of opportunities for the two candidates for Ames Mayor, John Hala and Victoria Shapinski, to present their visions and to answer questions from the public. This recording is as unedited as possible, but a very small amount of what was said was removed simply so we could fit within the time limit of Local Talk. The panel was moderated by Becky Coates, and we start the recording with John Hala's opening remarks.
I have to just give you tonight a snapshot of why I believe I am the most qualified candidate to be your mayor. I owned and led Hala Architecture, Structure, and Planning for 30 years, and over that time period, our firm worked with approximately 60% of our clients were school districts, counties, cities, and university projects. I facilitated well over 1,500 meetings with a variety of stakeholders. And through that process, we worked together to determine what each project scope was going to be, the cost, and the schedule. Every project followed the same process, and that was we were working with diverse stakeholders to accomplish specific objectives and goals that our clients have set. Through that process, I listened to their needs and objectives, encouraged collaboration, and we frequently needed to compromise on objectives in order to keep the vision and goals of the client in focus.
I dealt with everybody with integrity, honesty, and openness, and our practice was primarily focused on public, not private sector work. Secondly, I had the privilege of serving as president of Campus Town Action Association from 2010 until 2012, and also as the president of CyRide from 2015 until the present. My role required me to exercise the same leadership skills and abilities that I utilize in my practice. While we tackled challenging issues, we found creative solutions in order to move the institution forward. I think it's important to note also that I was asked by both by my peers in both these organizations to lead the organization. They recognized that I was an active listener, I had a collaborative spirit, and that I was very passionate about helping get the vision of the organization move forward. I share these three experiences with you because it's very important to understand that the same leadership qualities that I've demonstrated and have experienced for the last 30 years is what I believe is required for a successful mayor. Over the past months, as I've been meeting with Ames residents, talking about the mayoral campaign and what is their concerns and issues, they asked me, what are some important long-term projects that I would be interested in seeing moving forward? There are a number of them. First of all, we've entered into a complete street study. I'm very excited about that in terms of looking at the different modes of transportation. We finished a Lincoln Way corridor study plan, and now we're beginning to execute on the first phase of that. I'm very excited about the solar farm coming to town and seeing that come to fruition. And I've heard a lot about traffic in all my door knocking and how important that is. And I'm pleased to report that the council is moving forward and we're going to see South Grand extended down to South 16th to try and alleviate the congestions on Duff. I also want to help strengthen neighborhoods. And also I want to see the Healthy Life Center move forward. It's a very exciting concept and one that's going to be a significant improvement to our community. The top priority, though, of mine is to ensure that Ames has a genuine and welcoming community culture, one that is inclusive and friendly to everyone who calls Ames home.
Victoria. The heart of our campaign is about connections. I've been connected to this community since the early 70s when my parents moved here. If anyone knows the name Sunstrand, then you're aging yourselves, but that's why they came here. But this was always my home, even though I wasn't necessarily here all the time. I was doing my undergraduate work, started at University of Michigan, did my graduate work in Vancouver, British Columbia, at Simon Fraser University, finished my undergraduate actually here at Iowa State. I worked in the music business for 15 years in the Detroit Ann Arbor area. This was always home. Even when I lived in Ecuador for some period of time, this was home. When I worked at MIT in fundraising, this was home. But in 2000, it became evident that I needed to be a little bit closer to home because my parents were aging. And so I was fortunate enough to be offered a position of Director of Conference Services here at ISU. Within that first week of coming to Ames permanently, I came here a lot because this was home. I always had a bedroom here, and this is the basement, where the basement was, where all my stuff was. But I came permanently in 2000. And during that first week, reconnected with somebody that I'd met a long time ago, Steve Sullivan. We ended up in this order buying a house, getting married, bringing a child into our lives, and threw in a dog and a couple cats there too, just in case I didn't have any extra time. And our lives changed as my parents aged and needed more care, as our child needed more services. He had some challenges. He's in a great place now, I'm happy to say, because of all the services that were available to us here in Ames. But through all of those situations in our lives, I made a lot of connections, hospitals, resources for both children and for aging adults, my husband's connections through work, through school, and all of those, and people who were here to help us. It was a very joyous time for us, but it was also one of the most difficult times in my life. I left my full-time job to take on a double full-time job, and it changed my worldview about how people live in our communities, because, or in our community, or any community, when you are a caregiver. I'm much different now when I'm in the store and somebody's kind of cranky, and I figure, I wonder if they don't have the resources, what are their days like? So connections is what like I said, is the core of the campaign. It's what drives me. It's what makes me want to go forward and make more connections in this community. As our situation at home changed, I was able to be a little more connected outside of the home. I joined the Access Board, the Women's Shelter Board here in town. I worked with Ames Reads. I was also a member of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Most recently, I was on the board of Friendship Arc Homes and Community Services. If you're not familiar with us, we build homes for intellectually disabled adults. I know more than I would have about the impact of managed care organizations and changes in Medicaid from that experience, and that's an evening's discussion in and of itself. I also just left for best practices because I was running the state board of ACLU. I'm a past member of the Ames City Council. And since being on the Ames City Council, helped found an organization called the Ames Progressive Alliance. And I use that organization as a great model of bringing diverse groups, a variety of perspectives together, people who are volunteering but are passionate about issues in our community, and taking those issues, those ideas to actions. And the solar array that is going to be built in this community is a great example of that. We also worked with the city to move the grant program for capital needs programs forward. We've been there to do inclusive aims, to show people that we can do things together. I'm running out of time, but I just want to say that the connecting is about engaging all the history, the expertise, the experiences that people have here in Ames, and bringing those together and connected to how we can make things happen here in Ames. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. Audience, it is your turn to ask questions, make comments, and provide information to the candidates.
Richard Dare.
You guys all swear by the laws of the Constitution when you take the oath to serve the public. If you had to change the oath that you would be taking, what would you change it to?
That is an excellent question, Richard. We will start with Victoria.
Okay, well, thank you, Richard. And Richard and I have a great relationship, and we're going to do better as we go forward, and hope that every other board that he sits in on and every other organization that he interacts with also moves forward in a really positive way. I guess if I could change an oath, which I don't know all the words to the oath that we're referring to, I would revert to my campaign core, which is connecting people, and make an oath to engage people, to appreciate all of the knowledge and the expertise that we have, and to actively figure out how we don't just talk about it, but how we actively make that happen. How we take all those various issues that we've said we care about that sometimes just don't get a lot of momentum. But I think figuring out those mechanisms is part of what we can do together, and moving forward on those things that are important to us also is what I would like to make an oath to do.
John?
I take an oath very seriously. I am promising to do something and following through with it. And people who have a lot of wisdom and a lot of tradition have written those oaths. And so I would certainly look forward to the opportunity of being sworn in as mayor and taking that oath. I'll go back to my top priority, which echoes a little bit what's being said here, and that is that I would add that I would ensure that Ames has a genuine and welcoming community culture, and one that is inclusive and friendly to everyone who calls Ames home.
For those of us who are seniors on fixed incomes, what can you do to restrain property tax increases? And we will start with Victoria.
Well, there are a lot of aspects in which I'm very concerned about our aging population that we need to make sure that we're taking care of, that we're holding on to that portion of our population who are the backbone of our volunteers, of many times participants in a variety of cultural and recreational offerings that we have here. One of the things I've talked a lot about is access and making sure that, and that has to do with dollars, that when we as taxpayers are supporting amenities in this community like pools or anything that is helping us enjoy our community more, that it needs to be financially accessible to everyone. Property taxes, that's another thing, isn't it? And maybe it's one of those things. I've never been asked that question, I'll be very honest. And any question that I haven't heard before or that's a new issue says to me we need to sit down and think about it. Obviously, there's a concern. And so these are those sorts of situations where whoever it was that asked the question needs to come to the table, and others who are also experiencing some difficulties because of property taxes, and we need to look at it. And that's the best that I can offer at this point in time.
Thank you, Victoria. John?
Well, taxes are established by the budget, which the council sets. And they just started last week with the initial stages of conversation on setting the budget. So the community can get involved in the conversation. You can come. In fact, it was very sparsely attended. And it's something that you can certainly come. And that's one thing I'm very passionate about, is engaging the community in that conversation. So you can play a role in that. And people came and they offered opinions. They offered things they wanted to see. Primarily, they wanted added, not taken away. So the way to really try and keep the cost down is to be prudent in what we invest in, be wise in our use of our finances. And I think that we should be very proud of the fact that we have one of the lowest tax rates in the central Iowa area for municipalities our size. I know it's a lot of money. I've heard the same thing going around talking to people in the community. They're very concerned about taxes. That's really understandable. And I will just point out the fact that one of the things that I've done in my career for 30 years and I'm passionate about is working with numbers and understanding where the costs go in a project. And I'll bring that same knowledge base and that expertise to looking at the budget and listening to you and working with council to endeavor to safeguard and keep that concern in mind, because it is a concern.
Hi, my name is Judy Lemish. I'm at 327 South Maple here in Ames. I'm personally aware of Victoria's position on the issue of the new state rental property occupancy law that was recently passed. But as I've been going around, I've had some people ask me about that and have a different opinion than I think you have. So if you could do us all a favor and give us your exact position on that, and John can weigh in on that as well. Thank you.
I have been very involved in the issue of occupancy in our core neighborhoods and the increased pressure that has been unprecedented in this community by a very quick and large increase in students. I was recently misquoted in one of our local papers. Let's just say it's run by students, and so we give them a break, saying that I had supported the change that the legislature imposed regarding the number of occupants in rental property. So I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that. As we move forward, I've been very excited to see the number of people who've gone out and done much research in a variety of ways of how we might address this thing that's happening in so many communities here. And personally, I see it from both sides. I mean, we have students here that we need to care about and make sure that they're not being taken advantage of and that they have access to good housing. We also have established neighborhoods where a certain quality of life is being very much jeopardized because of the amount of rental property and a more transient, different perspective group of sometimes students, and it's not working. So having a variety of ideas on the table, I think, is very encouraging right now. I think it's messier when you have a lot of different ideas, but I think in the end we're going to come to a much better result. I'm sad that it changed. I think it was working for us, but I do believe that we're going to find a good solution to address this next.
John?
Thanks for the question, Judy. There are a lot of vulnerable neighborhoods around the campus, and I've been engaged in conversations with a number of the neighborhood association representatives already. I applaud the council for putting a moratorium in place in terms of new rentals or trying to get that under control. They are being very, very proactive in terms of looking for solutions. And one thing that I'm very passionate about is finding a solution that we don't just go back and forth with legislature and get into a giant tug of war. So through just leadership, communication, we need to find a solution. And one thing I'm also talking about and considering is we need to get landlords, property owners, neighborhood representatives, and interested community representatives around a table, and we need to say, let's just leave all of our baggage at the door. Here are the issues. How can we come to a solution that everyone agrees to? And then let's go ahead and get it memorialized, but let's make sure that it's bulletproof. Sorry, that's a wrong term. Let's just make sure that it is a solution that will withstand any kind of a legal test or an attack by the legislature, because right now, frankly, I'm disturbed by the fact that the legislature seems to be taking away home rule but putting more responsibilities on us. So we're aware of it. I applaud the council for what they're doing. Very supportive, aware of what's going on. We got to find some creative solutions and work together.
If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk. We are listening to a recording of a panel of the two candidates for Ames City Mayor, John Hala and Victoria Shopinski. The presentation was hosted by the Story County League of Women Voters and was moderated by Becky Coates. Members of the public were invited to ask the candidates questions. Let's go back to the panel.
Hi there. My name is Monique Bink, and I live here in Ames. I want to thank you all for running. It's really important, and I appreciate you stepping up to do that. I, myself, am recently elected to the Ames Community School Board, and so my question for you is, what specifically would you do in your particular roles to positively impact the education of children in our communities? John?
Thanks, Monique, for that question. I just want to start out by saying that I have a high level of respect for each individual board's responsibility, so I really want to keep worlds separate. I don't want to see the city coming in and starting to tell the school district or the school board what to do. You have a great board in place, and I'm looking forward as mayor to working with that board. Secondly, it's really building a strong relationship between the council, the city, and the school. That's one thing that I really am passionate about, because I think that if we understand one another, I mean, I don't understand all the issues that are in the school district's world. I do facility-wise, but I don't necessarily in terms of, you know, the inner workings. So it's going to be some conversation and dialogue, but you, as Mayor Abby, is very committed to strengthening that to the point that we understand where we're going, how we can help one another out. I want you to be successful, because if the school is successful, the city is successful. And last but not least, I don't want to necessarily be throwing money at something, but, you know, asset does help fund well over 30 organizations that help provide resources from food to shelter to the broad cross-section. So being very committed to continuing to see asset be fully funded and looking at how that works to provide resources that for those who really do need the resources, because obviously someone who has an empty stomach or they're challenged in some way makes it much more difficult than to really be attentive in school as well.
Thank you. First and foremost, it's between the city and any entity, it's about relationship building and making sure that we have good, strong relationships, that we're not seeing ourselves as separate entities, but in the case of the school and this community, that we all share a desire to have well-educated, healthy children. I do not believe in this time that we can expect schools to do everything for our children with budget cuts and a variety of other reasons. I think as a community, we need to be filling in those gaps. We need to be making sure that all children get everything that they need so that when they're ready to leave this community or stay in this community when they're 18, that they're ready to do whatever it is that they want to do. And some of that is really basic stuff, like eating. One of our schools is now over 70% free and reduced lunch. That is a reflection of what is going on in our community and things that we don't see. We know that children aren't participating in activities because they don't have transportation. I was working with Raising Readers this summer at the Boys and Girls Club, and I asked a bunch of kids if they'd been to Furman Aquatic Center, and none of them had been there. We need to fix that. That's not an expense. That's just figuring out some really common sense solutions to make sure that we're taking care of all of our children. There's a program called Youth Master Planning, which I've participated in and talked about for a long time. There are a lot of aspects to it, and I look forward to the opportunity to talk more about solutions to taking care of our children.
Thank you, Victoria. I have questions from Amber Carreri. How would you help the City Council set realistic goals and to prioritize the work of council and staff? We'll start with John.
She's a coward for not being here, Amber. For 30 years, I've worked with clients to set goals and objectives, asking questions, and being passionate about understanding where we're headed. I look forward with great enthusiasm to working with the council and start looking at. One is we want to go back and look at what the goals have been for the last couple of years. Have we been successful? I think that they have been pretty successful in accomplishing that. It's taking a leadership role, bringing a what-if mentality. It's bringing in how can we do things differently? What are we hearing in the community? and then engaging in conversation, and then helping to arrive at solutions or directions for the city council. So it's going to be an active engagement, and I will say, prior to me announcing my candidacy, I met with all the council members to see if they were interested in running, and they all said no. Then I met with virtually all of them two other times to talk about vision for the community, types of leadership they're looking for in terms of a mayor, and I believe that we are closely aligned, and I'm very excited about the opportunity to work together with them moving forward and setting those goals for the community.
Victoria?
Sometimes having a forum like this where you have 2 hours seems like a lot of time, but when it comes to the variety and the breadth of issues that face a city, it's pretty overwhelming, which is why I say to people, I know a little bit about a lot of things, but what I have going for me is though I know a lot of you and a lot of people in this community who know a lot about very specific things. And that does speak to priorities. It's a very fascinating process that the council goes through each year to set priorities, and they're up there on the wall and then actually trying to make sure that they're all addressed. And I think that's where this experiment comes in that I am proposing, where we be better at engaging other people. I've been door knocking a lot lately. I've already put together a group of people who want to work on recycling, for example, which may not be on this list, but is something that I'm learning community members want to do. And I think sometimes, and I'll be very blunt, we don't do things because our staff time is full. And so we'll say, we can't do that because what about staff time? So I think that this is an opportunity to do this, a little bit of experimenting, to really and truly engage people who have specific interests, who have specific knowledge, and say, here, why don't you take this on? We'll connect you to local government, and we'll help make those things happen. And that's how I think you work with council, to move those priorities through and maybe even add a few more onto the list while we're at it.
Thank you, Victoria. I have a question from Barbara Woods. If elected, do you plan to connect with non-white sectors of Ames to understand their needs and to engage them in Ames? We will start with Victoria.
Absolutely. I'll use the Ames Progressive Alliance again as an example. After one too many black men were shot in this country, we felt as an organization that we needed to do something, to be proactive. So we went to one of the predominantly black churches here in town, Body of Christ Church. The police department, a good majority of them, joined us, and we had small group discussions. And those conversations are ongoing, and I think that sometimes big changes come from small efforts such as that, where at that particular gathering, I said, you know, we don't have to hang out together. You know, we may not have anything in common, but we need to recognize each other. We need to know that when we pass each other on the street, that we all belong to the same community. So that type of model of reaching, making those efforts to have those conversations, to make sure we know each other, I think is the first step, and that's what I would be doing.
John?
Barbara, I really appreciate that question, and I want you to know that I'm very passionate about, when I say my top priority is a genuine, welcoming community that's inclusive and friendly, I mean that, and that includes everyone, all 66,000-plus residents in this community. A few months ago, the mayor and this council adopted a resolution that affirmed Ames being a welcoming and inclusive community, and I will pledge to you that that will be upheld as mayor. Definitely be working with all different groups, including those of color, to better understand what we can do to work together and how we can strengthen the community. It is important. I'll look forward to conversations to understand who those groups are, both on campus as well as off campus, because we're all residents of Ames, students and full-time residents.
I have a question from Robert Howell. What's the largest annual budget you've managed in your career? John?
On SciRide, our current budget is almost $12 million. Now, we have staff that does oversee that and manage that. However, the board is responsible for looking all over the figures, asking questions, and seeking to make sure that we use the finances wisely and that we're planning ahead. So that would be $12 million. I think the question was directly responsible for, and then that would go to my own personal company, It's a little awkward to divulge what we gross. I'll give you a range. It was over $4 million was our annual budget, and that was under my personal responsibility, and that's also included overseeing 13 staff members.
Victoria?
I've worked with a variety of budgets for a variety of different entities. I've been on numerous boards. I know it's really easy to just flip through those profit loss statements, but it's really the fiduciary responsibility of a board to understand what those things mean. And so I've always tried to be as good at it as I can. I've worked with a variety of different dollar amounts. I was on this board. I was on the city council where we worked with, I think, $250 million. I've sort of lost track of what the exact number was. When I was with conference services here at the university, our influence, we knew I had to project how much when we, for example, wrote a 3-year contract to have Odyssey of the Mind be using the facilities at Iowa State. We determined that we were generating $40 million for this community. But that required a budget to make sure that I was putting together an appropriate budget for what we were going to be expecting or needing to pay for food services and for housing and all those variety of services in order to actually see that sort of return come into our community.
My name again is Judy Lemish from 327 South Maple. It seems like the city of Ames has quite a large number of apartments. We need to take stock of what we really need in this town and what we have before we keep building them. Number two, some of the placement of these apartment buildings, like the one that's now on Lincoln Way in West Ames, is right on the sidewalk. So when they're going to plow the street, they're going to throw all that snow right on that lower level. So it seemed rather ridiculous to put it there in the first place. So placement. And also actually number three, I live in a neighborhood that floods periodically and the Riverside Manor went under water several times and they decided not to fight it and the apartments were built anyway, built up. All the parking is now on the floodway. So if that floods and they don't get their cars out, they'll all be underwater. I don't want to have a lot of students trapped up there like Hurricane Sandy. Yeah, I can see it now. That's my question.
The question about apartment building is probably one of the number one things that I'm hearing when I'm at the door. We know that the vacancy rate is up. We need to understand what people want. For example, there are young professionals who are living in Ankeny, who are living in Des Moines. They are not attracting people because we don't have the appropriate housing. But I don't believe that we've ever asked. We talk about affordable housing. I'm not sure we know what people want. So that's number one. We're moving also into a new land use policy plan, now called a comprehensive plan. I'm very excited about it. I like the new way that we might be looking at how we make decisions in the future for housing under things like themes, like a theme of health, so that everything that you do has to answer the question as to how that contributes to the health of our community. You have me thinking about a lot of different things here because I've been looking at other communities and how people make decisions about building. It's not always done on an ad hoc basis in other places. Maybe every 4 months, you come to the table to look at zoning changes or land use policy plan changes. Some places, it's a year. So that you can look at things in a more holistic way, you can encourage people to plan. Also, there are places where you have to explain if you're building something, outside of this comprehensive plan, why that's good for the community. Who does it benefit? What are the long-term impacts? Those kinds of questions I would like to see incorporated into how we go forward with our building. Flooding is a whole other issue. We're going to flood. We're in a cycle. So, and we've seen a lot of plans for building to mitigate flooding. I think that we need to discourage people from building in that flood zone. So I've run out of time, but I mean, the whole flood question, I was on council when we talked about flood mitigation. I've paid attention since then, and I certainly would welcome the opportunity to talk about it more.
Thanks, Judy. I'm going to try and parse out a few of these items. First of all, there are zoning requirements, and I know in campus town, buildings can be built on the property line. And so consequently, what you're seeing and it's going up right now does comply with code. Otherwise, they could have gotten a building permit as well, too. There are specific reasons why it's that way, but it's zoned that way. And so they're going to go ahead and use all the property. Whether or not that's right or not, then the only way that can be changed is by going back and looking at the zoning ordinance and amending that. That would require you to be setting back farther from the street or from the back of the sidewalk. Secondly, the proliferation of all the apartments, Those all got built on property that was zoned high density. And so if a person owns a piece of property or bought a piece of property that's zoned high density, they have the privilege of going ahead and building on it. The city doesn't really have the ability to say, no, you can't do that. They bought the property under those particular pretenses. And we are going to be going through a comprehensive plan, which is going to allow for community input. Again, that's where you're going to have the ability to come in and offer input, because that's going to be talking about what's the vision for the community. Do we want more high density? Do we want more young professional housing? What is it that we do need? And that's where we can have the most impact, is by coming in and having that conversation. I think everyone is aware there's a lot of apartments that have grown up. And honestly, where would we have put all the students if there weren't people to come in? You know, we grew 11,000 students. But the point being is that it is an issue. We need to talk about it. And the best opportunity to make a change is going to be through the comprehensive plan.
Ann Kinzel, 720 Def. I've heard you both talk a lot about you want Ames to be a welcome and inclusive community. It's hard to say that we wouldn't want that to happen. How do we measure that? For example, let's say that there's some controversy sometimes in a city that young men in particular of color are stopped by the police more often than one would expect. So if we're going to be a welcoming and inclusive community, that might be an issue. How would you, as mayor, deal with the question if you were approached by a group that said, we would like an inventory of police stops and to determine if they were appropriate in terms of the color of those who were stopped?
John?
What I heard the question was, is that would you be open to a group coming in and auditing? There are groups, I understand, that do come in and they will do an evaluation of how the police have, if they have overtly or excessively targeted people. I think that's appropriate to go through that process. I think it's a learning experience that can be done. It can be a positive thing. It's not something that I have talked to Chuck Sykosh about yet, but I know that he's very committed to treating all residents equally, regardless of their color or their race or nationality. So if the question was, would I be supportive? Yes, I'd be supportive of going through that process and working together with the police department in not a negative way, but in a positive way to look to make positive changes for the community.
Victoria?
I've certainly spoken to enough people in this community who have been pulled over while driving non-white. We have looked at systems. This is a conversation that I've had with Chief Sykosh. It seems to be driven by dollars, but not opposed to moving forward on placing systems that make sure that we document who is pulled over and why they're pulled over. So we may have a perception that everything's great, and it'd be great if everything is great, but let's know that for sure. Let's turn perceptions into fact so we know what is happening in our community. If things are happening in other places in the country, it's happening in Ames. It's true of many other unfortunate things that we hear about in the U.S., and it's all happening in Ames, Iowa also. So there's no reason to believe that somehow we're exempt. And I think, given the climate nationally, we have to do everything that we can in Ames to be better and to make sure, through systems like documenting who's being pulled over, that we really are being inclusive and welcoming and caring. And that's one thing that we can do to be moving in that positive direction.
I have another question. It's from Nafiz Hamid Rahi. In this current day and age, Internet service has become a utility just like electricity and water, but it seems we don't put enough emphasis on improving access to quality service. How do you plan to work with ISP providers in Ames to provide residents with better Internet service? Victoria.
Another conversation I'm having quite often at people's doors and at coffees. I learned there are people in our community who don't have access to internet service at all. And it has nothing to do with the property value or the house value. It just has to do with where that particular person's house is located. In 2017, it is essential to have the best internet service, particularly in a community with a university of research and technology. We need to be doing some investigation. We know Iowa Falls, for an example here in Iowa, but other cities across the nation are offering internet service as a utility. So there's an economy of scale in servicing everyone in your community. It's good for business. It's good for education. It's good for healthcare. It's good for everything we do. I don't know about you, but my day is ruined when my internet service goes down. And I know I'm not alone. So I'm glad the question is asked. I think it's a priority and that we need to get on quickly and figure out how to do better.
Thank you, Victoria. John?
Very pertinent question and one that the council already has initiated. They had a workshop here earlier this year. They invited all the ISPs, Internet Service Providers, to come around the table and start delving into what are the issues and why is there inconsistent service and poor service. We also got into do we have another utility started here and it become a city internet service, and that is a very complex and can be a very costly undertaking. Goes back to the question about keeping taxes down. Boy, we all understand the cost regarding that before we undertake that. But there's no question we need to have a robust and strong internet service. Downtown just got fiber wrapped around it, and that's something that we've been needing in the downtown area. But yes, there definitely is very sporadic, very poor internet service in certain areas. So how we solve it? I believe the city has some very frank conversations with the ISPs and just says we need to see improvements because our community not only wants it, but they need it. Kids need it for homework. Businesses at home need it. And it's something that if we're going to grow as a community and be strong as a community, we need to have as a backbone. So what we can do is continuing with these workshops, but having some very frank conversations and seeing how we can go ahead and look at are there monopolies in place, or are there things that we can do to try and encourage improvements in the overall capital investment service-wise.
Thank you, John.
Ido Friedberg, Vermont Circle. How would you work to strengthen local businesses? I believe the last independent bookstore in Ames closed about a year ago. That was Firehouse. You know, there are various other businesses, especially in retail, that are probably being outcompeted by national chains. So while there's probably room for both, I think we can do better with local businesses. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. Thank you.
John?
Thank you for the question. Having been a small business owner for over 30 years, that's a question that's near and dear to my heart. One thing I believe is being proactive is as businesses look to grow or need to remodel is to be very proactive and saying, how can we support you? And in terms of codes, as well as streamlining the process for getting permitting. Another thing is the idea of the internet is really very important as well too. So I believe the city can help by putting pressure on the ISPs to try and provide that necessary service. While I was on Campus Town Action Association, I was working with, or our organization worked with a lot of local businesses. And unfortunately, some of those businesses were not necessarily able to pay the rent that would be coming in from the new businesses or the new buildings that came in. They were paying rent, which is a third of what the new buildings that were built along Lincoln Way were going to be charging. So one thing that we did at Campus Town Action Association was that we advocated on behalf when a Kingland building was being developed was to try and get some below market rate rent to try and support local businesses to give them a chance to operate along there. That's a very difficult thing to do because you're actually entering into the financial realm of the property owner himself. And I believe we had some limited success, but those are just some of the opportunities to try and strengthen the businesses or support the businesses.
Victoria?
I think generally speaking, we can look at national chains much differently than locally grown businesses. We know that across the country, retailers are closing. We're seeing some of that happen here in our own community, those big national chains. What we have in Ames is a variety of unique boutique businesses. Our downtown is an attraction. It's an amenity because we have a variety of locally owned businesses. And I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that those businesses have what they need to acquire the stability so they can continue to grow. There is a lot of new research out there about what attracts businesses, and it's about amenities. Those writings say that a dollar spent on amenities, for example, is not the same as a dollar spent on, say, on incentives. So when you're building more amenities in your community, like the Healthy Life Center, that it attracts business, it keeps business, it attracts people, and it keeps people. And so we're well on our way there, and I think we can do more, but that's how I think we help local business. We make sure that our Main Street, Somerset, Campus Town are well maintained, that activities are happening there to draw people into those areas, and that we see them for what they are and take good care of.
Our last two questions of the evening will come from our Facebook audience and our television audience. First question is from Danielle Bennett. What do you see as most important role of Ames mayor, and why do you want to be mayor? Victoria.
Well, I've been saying a lot, this is called a weak mayor system because we have a city manager, but this is not a weak job, and it has a lot of opportunities. It has opportunities to share new ideas, to share what one is hearing about in the community, to make sure that as mayor, I'm out in the community, still connecting to people, finding out what's important, looking for those systems to disseminate information about what is going on in the city, but more importantly, or just as importantly, figuring out those systems to create a two-way conversation. And that's what I was talking about earlier, about engaging and appreciating all the knowledge that we have out there. And that, I think, is the most important, maybe along with also building strong relationships and figuring out how to agree to disagree, but most importantly, figuring out what it is that we share, what it is that we want to do together, and building those connections so that when anything comes up, we know who we're going to talk to and we're going to do things well together. So building relationships and getting as many people, as many voices, diverse perspectives involved in the conversation. And it's not just local. I mean, we do need to be paying attention to what's going on in the county. That's a very important relationship. Also, what obviously state legislative bodies play an important role in what happens in our cities. And so those two are part of paying attention, being involved, making sure that those conversations are happening. I belonged to, and I guess I still do, I still get their emails, the League of Cities, which is a wonderful organization when you're on a council or serving as mayor. And it offers that opportunity to build relationships across the country so you don't have to ever reinvent the wheel. A lot of cool things are happening all over the place, and there are many people who want to share that information.
John?
Thank you for the question. I believe the most important role of the mayor is being the leader of the community from the standpoint of providing leadership for the council. The mayor is the face of city government to the community, and also being a champion for the community. I will be the cheerleader for this community in the face of, in not only in the city limits, but also in state and federal, at the county level, with Iowa State University, and building and strengthening relationships between those different institutions. Why do I want to do it? I love this community. This community is significant to me. I met my wife for 40 years here at Iowa State. Both of our sons live here. We have 8 grandkids that live here. And I love serving people, and I'm passionate about doing that. For 30 years, I served clients through my business, and I represented them in a variety of different ways. And I look forward to the opportunity as mayor, as serving the community, listening to you, representing you, leading out, and continuing to build and strengthen the community.
Thank you, John. Our last question of the evening. There is not enough housing available in Ames for persons needing Section 8 assistance. What could you do about that?
Well, that's certainly a complex issue that has a lot of things that need to be discussed in general. We just don't have a lot of affordable housing in general. I would start working with Vanessa Baker Latimer and talking to her and finding out what can the council do from the standpoint of looking for opportunities. Obviously, we need to find land that we can build Section 8 housing, or look for opportunities for converting existing housing to Section 8. And then be supportive of that need, of that project, and seek to look for funding. One of the things that Section 8 would be relying upon is going to be federal funding. And so it would also be contingent upon, can we get the federal funds necessary in order to help subsidize the Section 8 housing.
Thank you, John. Victoria?
Well, I did speak to Vanessa Latimer Baker recently. She was sharing with me how, because there is an increased vacancy rate, all of a sudden she's getting calls with offers to take Section 8 housing vouchers. So there's a positive side to the proliferation of apartments here in our community, but it's certainly not the answer because there's a waiting list. And it speaks to affordable housing in general, which we've talked about for way too many years. We need to figure out ways to be more creative, to offer a variety of housing options in this community. It comes back to understanding what people want, but it's also looking around and seeing other types of models that are being built. Iowa City's doing co-housing, and that apparently is appealing to millennials, aging populations, and can also be made to be more affordable when you share spaces. Des Moines doing tiny houses for people who are homeless. We need to be looking at this variety of options. And when we talk affordability, it shouldn't just mean, please take $6,000 off of the cost of me having to pay for the street and I'll build an affordable house. We need to be more creative, like shared geothermal, shared solar, shared spaces. There are a lot of things that we can be doing. And once again, not reinventing the wheel. Other places are trying these things and having great success in creating affordable housing. And I would like to see us move in that direction. And maybe that's another committee. Maybe that's a new board or commission that just looks at this particular issue that we've talked about for too long. And I don't believe we've come up with any creative or innovative solutions. So let's do it.
Thank you, Victoria. It's now time for our candidates, and thank you, audience, for wonderful questions. Candidates, we will let you make final remarks. Victoria?
Well, I'd like to close by saying that I believe this local election, like so many others across the nation, may be more significant than any that have preceded. I have for years made a case for local government, saying that it affects our daily lives to a much greater extent than what happens at other levels of government. We know now there are many reasons to be frustrated with the federal government, and we know there's a growing divide between groups and individuals in this country. That's why this election is so important. I'm convinced that those challenges, which appear so overwhelming when looking at an entire nation, can be opportunities for us as a community to do better, to be inclusive, to be welcoming, to be caring. The heart of my campaign is about connecting people, and that means a lot of things. I thought a lot about very specific structures that we can develop to bring a variety of voices to the table, to bring diverse groups and a variety of perspectives. But getting to those specifics comes when we agree to disagree and commit to finding our common values, our shared hopes for our families and for all the members of our community, and our desire to make AIMS better than it already is. In my recent door-knocking adventures, I met a man who described himself as very liberal, talked about the guy across the street who apparently made a bad decision in the way he voted, and somebody else on the street that he didn't care for much either. I didn't know where the conversation was going, but where it went was something that this neighborhood is doing where they put pink flamingos out on the front yard, and that's where you go because that's where you come over and have some coffee or you have a drink. And now he knows that guy across the street, and he said there are some things we never talk about, but it turns out we have a lot in common. So I think quite often these small gestures are what build community, that we can make large policy decisions, but it's doing those sorts of things. And I was thinking, you know, this is something as mayor that could be encouraged, and I want to be mayor so I can tell that story a lot and maybe come up with something different than pink flamingos, which seem kind of Floridian. But I want to be a champion for this community, and I appreciate all the support that has been shown, and next thing comes voting, and I will appreciate your support in the voting booth on November 7th. So thank you so much for being here, for your time, and for your questions.
John?
Well, first of all, thank you to the League and for everyone coming and paying attention and for the great questions. So, how do you decide who to vote for? This is an important decision, and it's at an important time. We're going to have a new Iowa State president in a couple of months. We have three new school board members. We have a new council member coming on, and we'll have a new mayor. As I mentioned in a previous question, I believe one of the most important roles a mayor has is being a community leader and a champion for the entire community. One of my passions is going to be building strong relationships with key leaders in this community, including Iowa State, the school board, county board supervisors, hospital trustees, and other leaders, and open lines of communication. The city of Ames can lead this effort to move forward in a dynamic and proactive way.
I want to make sure that we understand what everyone's visions and goals are as institutions. We need to understand what Iowa State's vision is going forward. Are they going to increase enrollment? Are they going to go ahead and flatten out? Are they going to go ahead and decline? We need to work together to understand where they all intersect together for the common good for all 66,000 residents. I've already begun meeting with neighborhood association representatives to talk about understanding how we can strengthen neighborhoods. I have already begun meeting with some social service agencies to deepen my understanding of what the needs are in the community. Many times those are people who are frail and faceless and don't have much of a voice. So coming full circle, how will you decide who to vote for mayor on November 7th? I believe that during this forum, I've demonstrated and just explained how my leadership style and experience will be applicable to the mayor's role. And I ask you to consider the fact that over 30 years I have led different organizations. They prove how I will serve you as mayor, and I'll continue to be the active listener, collaborator, and moving projects forward. I appreciate you listening, and I ask for you to vote for me on November 7th. Thank you.
Thank you, audience and candidates. Good luck to you all.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been listening to a recording of a public panel of the two candidates for Ames City Mayor, John Hala and Victoria Shapinski. The presentation was hosted by the Story County League of Women Voters and moderated by Becky Coates. At the top of the hour, we heard a summary of Iowa in the news brought to you by the Iowa Informer. The Iowa Informer can be found at iowainformer.com. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Also remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org, where you'll also find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI streams live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting One Night in Memphis, a night of rockabilly, country, gospel, and 1950s rock and roll on Thursday, October 26th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. workinames.com.